The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goetz.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this May 28th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and you got me for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. There is so much to go over on the show today. 2 hours is probably not going to be enough, but we're going to do our best to squeeze it all in with some breaking news for Auburn basketball, big weekend upcoming for Auburn football, and also a big weekend for Auburn baseball as well, and some MLB things and stuff like that. And so it's going to be a lot of fun on the show today, talking all three of the major sports for Auburn, baseball, basketball, and football. We'll tell you more about it coming up in just a few minutes. But in the studio with me, as he is every single day, my man Christian Griffin. How are you, sir? Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday, man. I was doing pretty good. And then about 8 minutes ago, for some reason, I don't know exactly what the reason is, but my day just got a whole lot better. Maybe it was Lindsay pulling up in the parking lot. Maybe it was some news that I saw on my phone that we're definitely going to get to here in just a little bit. But no, really excited to be able to dive into everything. We got to kick off yesterday's show talking about Auburn being the fourth national seed, what their regional looks like, what their super regional looks like. And so really excited to be able to bring in the expert to be able to dive into all of that with us here today.
Yeah, we told you we're going to have our guy Lindsey Crosby in for a much overdue baseball power hour. And we do that now, talking Auburn, talking NCAA, SEC, regionals, all sorts of stuff. We bring him in now. We'll talk a little major leagues and the Braves. There's some drama going on between Atlanta and Philly right now, too. But Lindsey, my man, it's good to see you. How are you, brother?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be here. It's just nice to find time to be able to come in and do something like this.
Yeah.
Things are busy. But
very busy.
Yeah, there's some sort of exciting Auburn news. I didn't hear what it is.
It involves the slightly bigger, more orange ball that Auburn uses on the basketball side of things.
Oh, basket. Oh, shooty hoops. The shooty hoops people did something. Cool.
Yeah, there is a little bit of news over on that side. We understand that there is breaking news twice today for Auburn basketball, picking up a international superstar that's going to be joining the team. And then my favorite guard that has ever played at Auburn after just one season, our glorious king is returning for another year. Tahad Pettiford. Breaking news from Joe Tipton. Yeah, about 10 or 15 minutes ago, that Tahad Pettiford will be returning to play next year.
And for the Lindsey Crosbys of the world, these shooty hoops, speaking in MLB terms, it's Ronald Acuna coming back for Auburn Tigers
and for
Bruce Pearl.
Thank you for the metaphor there to help me understand the significance of this.
Lindsey does know basketball. Let's go ahead and clear that up. I don't want people thinking this guy's not credible or doesn't know what's going on. But he is our baseball guy. He is our baseball guru. We bring him in when big things are happening. And like you said, it's just nice to finally get some time to get everybody together and talk about what has been a magical season for Butch Thompson and Auburn baseball. We've had the chance all season long to talk with players, assistants, Butch himself about the season as a whole. We talked with Cooper McMurray yesterday, and it's just been a really fun year covering Auburn baseball, and I know that you can speak to that.
Yeah, I mean, this roster has been one of the more interesting for me because they've had such potential. And there's always been little things here or there. Like, the offense was cold a little bit early in conference play. The pitching stumbled a little bit the last couple weeks. But this roster, top to bottom, is one of the more talented that I think has been at Auburn during my time covering the program. And they're hosting their third regional in 4 years. This is tied to the highest seed they've ever had at the number four national seed. And if they can win the Auburn regional, which they are favored to do, but it's not a guarantee, obviously. If they can win the Auburn regional, they will host the first super regional in Plainsman Park history. And I remember before the season started coming on with you guys, and we were talking about expectations. And I remember saying, this is a team, I think this is a postseason team. And I think if everything breaks right, they can host a regional. And they surpassed even my expectations, because not only are they hosting a regional, they're in line to host a Super.
Remind me when you said that and going into the year, what was it that was giving you confidence that this team would make it to the postseason, but what was it holding you back that would limit them from possibly hosting their first ever Super Regional?
For me,
way back then.
Yeah, yeah. The confidence was in the offense. I felt you had a lot of returning bats. You had guys that got a lot of experience last year. My hesitance was actually the pitching staff. Because last year's pitching staff, I don't think anybody finished with an ERA under 4.5, and it was really just a struggle to get through a weekend and, you know, and know where your 27 innings were going to come from. And I feel like this year it's almost been the opposite. You've had a lot of faith in the weekend because you were able to build around Sam Dutton. He was your workhorse. You could set up a whole pitching plan around the idea that he's going to be out there and give you 5 or 6 innings in that first game, and you'll be in it, if not winning, when he leaves, and you can figure out the rest. I saw the pitching staff improving. I don't think I saw them improving to this point, and that's been the big difference for Auburn this year.
And it's been even past the starters. I mean, as of late, we've talked about it on the show here a couple of times, where it feels like the bullpen has really, really come to life. And it's been a bit of a roller coaster year for the guys at the plate, the guys on the mound, and the guys in the bullpen. But there's been a couple times, you saw it in the SEC tournament in Hoover, where it was the bullpen that really found a way to keep you in the game, and you feel like that could be a very, very big factor moving forward.
Yeah, something that Auburn's been good about, and I think they learned this lesson last year, is they've been good about, they see a starter or a pitcher in general, is like there's signs of trouble there. They're willing to make the move to somebody proactively rather than reactively.
Sure.
And we've seen some guys step up, like Ryan Hetzler is somebody, you know, transfer into the program. He's done single inning stints. Like, he's gotten saves, like, you know, taking 2 appearances in a weekend and things like that. Against Ole Miss the last weekend of the year, he went 5 innings in the series finale. And I think he allowed maybe like 1 run in those 5 innings. And was able to, like, Auburn came out of that with a win.
As your designated closer.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's been able to take multiple innings if you need to. He's been able to go deep like that. You've been able to move Cam Tilley from the bullpen to the rotation. They've had a lot more options on the back end that they trust. And so because of that, they're able to proactively go to somebody else. Hey, we're going to go to Carson Myers here. We're going to go to Parker Carlson here. We're going to do, you know, whoever. Because they have so many options that they feel like we can trust this guy to get through a lineup once and not leave us in a hole. And for the most part, it's worked all season. And that's just, I think that's a step farther than I expected coming into the year.
Was there any expert talk that was beyond what we were hearing, where Auburn was projected anywhere from 6th to 8th in the super or in the national seeds? Obviously, you end up getting the 4th, which you feel like came as a pleasant surprise to the general public of Auburn fans. And obviously, when you dive into it, the RPI, the strength of schedule, things like that, kind of give perfect, you know, stepping stone examples. But was there any talk on y'all's side of things, on the expert side, to where it didn't necessarily come as much as a surprise?
I think I was pretty confident, everybody I was talking to, Auburn was going to be a national seed. I don't think I saw the number 4 spot, right? It was a lot of talk about them being 6th, maybe if everything broke the wrong way, them being 8th. I don't think I quite saw it being a 4, but the big differentiator from what I've been told and from talking to people has been the out-of-conference schedule.
Yeah.
Like, Auburn had the number 1 strength of schedule in the entire country for everybody. And a lot of SEC schools don't have a great non-conference strength of schedule. Auburn was top 10.
Yeah.
Butch gave a lot of credit for that to Greg Dry, director of operations. But the big determinator in where the seed ended up being so high was Auburn played 9 games against tournament teams out of conference.
Yeah, that's
and
huge.
They went 8-1 in those games.
Golly.
And it wasn't just like, hey, we got Wright State, they're a tournament team, we swept them. They had a home and home with Georgia Tech. They had that Texas tournament where they went 3-0 against a top 10 Oregon State team, against Baylor, against Ohio State. Like, they really pushed themselves on a schedule perspective in a way that they really never have before, and were rewarded with it, because I mean, let's be honest. They are under 40 wins. There's no other national seed that has a win total like Auburn's. But the overall body of work is so incredibly impressive that they earned a 4 seed legitimately. I've been told if they had 4 or 5 out-of-conference games against tournament teams, maybe, and they went 4-1 in those, they probably would be that 6, 7, 8 seed. But they're at a 4 because they went 8-1. They had 9 of those.
And I'll say this. I think they have a win over a team that should have been in the tournament in Troy. Troy got hosed. I'm sorry. Troy got hosed. I mean, how many projections, Christian, did we sit and look at over those last few days where it was like, oh, no, not only is Auburn, I mean, good thing was Auburn, we felt like was going to be a top 8 seed, host a regional, have the chance to host a super, but Troy was that 2 seed. Yeah. We were looking at it, it's like, oh, no, Troy's they're going to send Troy to Plainsman Park, a team that got beat early in the year, a team that was a top 25 team at the time, and then they kind of fizzled out of their conference tournament, and they got left out. I think Troy really got shafted there.
The two biggest snubs in the tournament based on either being in or not being in or where they're seated is Troy and Georgia Tech. But like Troy, top 50 RPI, they finish with 39 wins. Their non-conference, I think it was their non-conference RPI was like top 15 in the country.
Wow.
That absolutely is a tournament team. And the fact that they didn't make it in is probably, to me, the most egregious miss of this entire tournament. It blows my mind. But also Georgia Tech beat a 2 seed. That's a really tough Oxford regional now.
It's insane.
Western Kentucky, Murray State's a frisky 4 seed.
Where Georgia Tech was slated, I mean, a lot of people were projecting them to be 15 or 16 and host a regional in Atlanta.
Yeah, and instead they are. Now, I don't know how much geography plays into this. Is it the fact that Athens was a top 8 seed? Like, the Georgia was a national seed with a regional there? I don't want to assume that that's the reason why. But I really can't think of any other reason why Georgia Tech, with that strength of schedule, with that record, winning the regular season in the ACC, like they were top 20, they were 21st in RPI in the entire country. They had 40 wins. How is that not a team that hosts a regional? But no, they're a 2 seed and they're going on the road to the number 10 spot.
I think they got hosed.
Basically showed that they were the 10th or the 6th best 2 seed or the 6th worst 2 seed if it was the snake draft. Like,
roughly,
that's essentially.
So not even, I mean, they would have been
not
like
even going
the
to
20s.
The 16 seed. Yeah. Basically not even saying that they were 16, 17, 18, or 19 because then you would have played one of the lower seeds. I feel like their reaction on the selection show kind of spoke for the national public on that side of things.
Now, real quick, sorry. The only thing I can think about on the Georgia Tech side for an explanation why would be their non-conference schedule outside of Auburn wasn't really that good. The strength of schedule non-conference was like 100, and they really didn't take on any challenges in non-conference play, right? It was Old Dominion, it was Marshall, it was Western Michigan, and then they got into conference play. And part of that's the conference is so big, right? They're trying to get as many games as they can.
Well, the two tough games they played against Auburn, they lost.
Exactly.
Say, wild to think if they were 1-1, it might be a completely different story.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, they were probably that close. Like, they lost in Atlanta, 9-8 to Auburn. And if that game is one run the other direction, that might have been enough, given Auburn's RPI, to push them into a hosting spot. And that's just, every game matters.
We've talked a lot about it on the football side of things, but baseball and basketball are a little bit more comparable for this subject of that non-conference slate. Again, football, you're at the point right now of we're seeing the home and homes go away just because of how wild the schedule is, and it doesn't matter who you play as long as it's a win. For basketball, we've seen it go otherwise. Now in baseball with RPI, you could possibly see that go in the other direction. Are more and more teams going to take that Auburn, that Butch Thompson mentality of let's not get the easy three-game sweep in early February just to get us off on the right foot. Let's schedule some of these top mid-majors that are expected to make a little bit of noise or expected to win some of the smaller tournaments, and that makes you going 2-1, or it makes that sweep look even better, and then a team possibly like, again, Georgia Tech just kind of being the guinea pig of this example, where if they were to have anywhere close to what Auburn had non-conference, then it would be a very completely different story.
I think it's going to take teams having a situation like Georgia Tech, where you don't have any challenges, you drop the only real non-conference challenges you have, and you don't get in. I think it's going to take something like that for a school to say, we need to schedule harder teams. This doesn't happen again. I think the average team, they might look at Auburn and they might say, Auburn's a top four seed because they're out of conference and the schedule was so high, but they were going to be a national seed anyway. So, or a host team anyway.
Sure.
So they're not going to learn the lesson until it happens to a team like Georgia Tech, who absolutely could be scheduling better out of conference opponents and just choose not to. I think that's the turning point. Like, it might fix for them. I don't think it's going to be a wholesale fix. You still see a lot of schools canceling games late in the year to not hurt their RPI. And it's something where, like, Auburn had zero reason to play Jacksonville State that final week of the year.
Right.
Right. I mean, they had nothing to gain, everything to lose, but they had built such a great resume that they said, even if we bring Jacksonville State in town and we lose this game, we're still going to be secure in what we're doing, that they went ahead and played the game. And you see so many schools, they don't look at scheduling strategically and say, where can we get the best possible resume to offset our conference? Instead, they say, where can we get to a certain number of wins where we should be able to get what we want?
Isn't it so interesting, before we get to break here, the fact that basketball and baseball are judged the same way getting to the postseason, where you are rewarded for playing a tough schedule, but the conversations we're having in football right now is, don't go play that out of conference team. You're not going to get any benefit from that. If you win, cool, but here's a sticker. But if you lose, you're going to get punished for it. But basketball and baseball, we just saw Auburn basketball do it this past year. The greatest non-conference schedule in the history of the sport, Auburn baseball, did something very similar, and both teams got rewarded for it with their postseason rankings.
I think part of it in football, too, is there's so few games that, like,
each one means so much more.
Yeah. Like, if you think about Auburn baseball, okay, they played 56 games. In essence, every football game is the same as five baseball games. So, like, there's just so many more games. You have to win your games to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
If you had a 25-game baseball season or football season, you might be able to work to base it off of your strength of schedule and all of that. But there's just so few games. You got to win them all. Yeah. I think that's kind of the hard part. And that's also the hard part people like me have getting football fans into baseball, is getting them to understand that topic. Like, hey, if you lose one game out of three in a series, that's like being down after one quarter of a football game. Like, you lost one quarter, but you won the game. Don't be mad about that.
Yeah, and I guess I was coming more from, like, the RPI standpoint.
Sure.
The net and things like that that exist with the other sports, where football, it's like, well, we got this group of people. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. Wow.
We were 11-1 instead of possibly 9-3.
Yeah, we really enjoyed watching that game the other day. We'll give you credit for it. Good job.
We tried to do an RPI kind of thing with the BCS, and everybody hated it. So I guess they've just gone back to win their games.
Now everybody's sitting there going, BCS, where
yes,
are you?
Yes, we didn't hate
where
the
are
BCS.
You?
Maybe
just
the BCS
hated the
wasn't
number.
That bad, yeah.
Oh, gosh. What could have been? Oh, well. Well, we're talking a lot of baseball here in hour number one, as Auburn is hosting a regional this weekend. If they win, they'll host a super regional for the first time. But the SEC made history again. Other teams around the conference who are hosting regionals, and some possible super regional matchups across the conference. We'll talk about that with Lindsey Crosby coming up next here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Bruce Pearl, and you are on the line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
We continue on talking baseball here in hour number one on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Basketball news coming a little bit later. We'll have Daryl Dappert's Double D will be joining us, as he always does on Wednesday afternoons. So we'll talk to him at 3:15. Lots of basketball conversation there, some football things as well.
Congratulate Daryl on graduating from college.
He went back and got it. I'm so proud of him.
Baseball broadcast partner.
Yeah. You guys did a bunch of biscuits games and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys did awesome.
Cap looked so cute on him.
Yeah. Oh, he did. Daryl was awesome. We did. We got to talk to him a little bit about it last week, and he went into that. So, yes, very cool thing for Daryl. We'll talk to him coming up in hour two about all the basketball news, football things, and stuff. But we've got Lindsey Crosby with us, who plug everything you got going on right now. I can't keep up.
How much time do we have? Okay. So
there's nothing to plug tonight, unfortunately.
The Braves game for tonight against the Phillies got postponed. postponed because of rain. Split doubleheader tomorrow. But normally what my day looks like is we've got Braves Today. That is both a podcast and a newsletter that I created and do every single day. We have the Braves Postcast, part of Locked On Sports Atlanta. I go live after every single Braves game to break it all down.
Heck yeah.
We have MLB Game Night, which is a daily MLB recap 7 days a week on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm one of four hosts we have for that. It's not every single day. We also have the Barn Baseball Show, mm-hmm. which is the subject of this first half of the show here, our first half of the hour
there you go.
Here on the Barn Auburn's YouTube. It's me, Sonny DeShera, Brad Law. We dropped an episode just this morning breaking down the regional, why Auburn deserved to be that number four national seed, how we'd set up the pitching, all of that stuff. So lots of stuff there for everybody. I hope I'm giving you guys enough baseball content.
Yeah, that's right. Well, go check all of that out, and we're going to get some of your thoughts on Auburn and their regional coming up in just a few minutes. Yep. But wanted to take a look at some of the other regionals that we've been talking about this week, specifically with SEC teams, right? You've got a record number of SEC teams who made the field. 13 of the 16 SEC squads made it to the NCAA tournament. We broke the record in basketball and just broke it again in baseball.
What I love is that Texas A&M is the first ever preseason national, like, number one yep. to not make the tournament. Michael Ealy is possibly in trouble. I don't think they're going to get rid of him, but, like, the amount of money they put into that roster
yeah.
to not make it.
And with Schlossnagel now being the two overall seed in Texas, is just, it's
and the preseason
wild.
Number two, Virginia didn't either.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
Crazy.
I think they had an argument to be in there, though, don't you, Lindsay?
Yeah, they had some key, like, at the end of the day, you got to win your games. But they, like, absolutely, I want to say, RPI-wise, they were, like, 60th.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of fringy in there. Another situation of an ACC team with a terrible non-conference. Their non-conference strength of schedule was, like, 115 or something nuts. Like, oh, no, sorry. The RPI was 115. The non-conference strength of schedule was, like, in the 200s.
Ooh.
So there's another situation, just like Georgia Tech, where if yeah. they had scheduled one or two better games at a conference and won them, that may have been enough to push them in there. The team right ahead of them, Stetson, is coming to Auburn this weekend, 63rd in RPI, 41st non-conference strength of schedule. They made it in, although I think they also kind of won the Atlantic Sun, which helps, but still.
Is there a regional that stands out to you that you automatically say is the toughest, and why is it Hattiesburg or Oxford?
Hattiesburg is one of them. I think a big part of that, like, people underestimate the crowds in the regionals.
Yes.
Right? Having a team in Alabama that travels well and is so close, I think is going to play a bigger role than a lot of people expect. So Southern Mississippi, Miami, you're getting another major conference team who went through an ACC kind of gauntlet. They didn't have the offense they usually have. Miami's always good for one or two just amazing pitchers to come out of there every year. Carson Palmquist, Herrick Hernandez, like, they've had some dudes who shoved into postseason. So that's going to be really tough for Southern Miss. Poor Columbia is going to get boat raced. But then outside of that, Oxford, Old Miss, Western Kentucky, a pissed off Georgia Tech team. And Murray State,
yep.
Drew Burris may hit five home runs in a weekend. I mean, if I had to bet on one person to lead the nation in homers in the regionals, it might be Georgia Tech's Drew Burris, just simply because of how mad he is that they did not get to host a regional.
Was he the one with his arms crossed
yes.
and just didn't
yeah.
have
he
any
He was
emotion?
In the very front yeah. that had no emotion about them being a two seed.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
the one dude over.
Yeah.
Didn't get
the one
memo.
Guy was like, heck yeah, all right.
And they're like, dude, chill.
He's
chill.
Like, hey, shut up.
We are not here for the clapping today.
No, those two regionals are going to be just insane. And some
I've
other ones are fun, too.
I say, I've got another one that people aren't talking about because it's West Coast. Corvallis.
Yes.
Yeah. Oregon State, USC, and TCU. USC is close enough to come by. TCU travels. And then, like, St. Mary. Don't sleep on St. Mary.
Ah.
They're more of a basketball thing than a baseball thing, but, like, that is three. Any regional where you have three power four opponents is a tough regional. And, like, or if you're a situation like Hattiesburg where it's two of them and you, Coastal, similar situation. Like, the Conway regional, Florida, they're going to travel well. They thought, you know, like, I think they're probably the favorites to come out of there. Eastern Carolina's nearby. They can come in and travel. And then Coastal Carolina, that's going to be tough too. But no, it's Knoxville's not bad.
I was looking at the Knoxville regional with Wake Forest and Cincinnati. But the thing I look at is Tennessee has been abysmal in Knoxville this year. Their record at home has been terrible. Especially down the stretch.
I'm going to present this without comment. Uh-oh. This is just a coincidence, I'm sure. This is the first season that they are checking bats before every game and not just before the series.
Oh.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Oh, you're just saying.
I'm just saying. But Wake Forest plays in a little tiny bandbox of a ballpark. Tennessee isn't much bigger. And so, like, I really think Wake Forest can surprise a lot of people offensively in that ballpark. Tennessee hasn't been as good at home when they have to follow the same rules as everybody else when it comes to your equipment.
Weather.
Yeah, that too. But I genuinely do think that that's a tough one, but I'm not putting that ahead of the Mississippi ones and Hattiesburg or Oxford.
But before the music kicks us out of here, a team that's hosting this weekend, it can be 1 through 16. If you had to sprinkle a little, you know, fun dollars on for entertainment purposes only, a team that's hosting that's on the biggest upset alert.
Oh, upset alert. I thought you were going to say the one that's going to do the best. Okay, upset alert.
Upset alert. A team that's hosting 1 through 16 that if you had to do something on it, a team you would bet on.
UCLA. They have UC Irving, Arizona State, and Fresno State in their regional. They're in trouble.
I feel like nobody's talking about that regional. Maybe just because it's in L.A.
West Coast, yep. UCLA's in trouble.
UCLA. Irvine was supposed to be a 14 or 15 right in there until about the last week.
Yep.
That's not a bad pick.
UC Irvine plus 270 to take that regional.
Ooh, we'll talk more odds in terms of Auburn's regional as they get started on Friday afternoon and Friday night at Plainsman Park. We've got 30 more minutes of baseball talk here in hour number one.
With Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I am Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We've got Lindsey Crosby in the studio with us as well, talking all things baseball in hour number one. We'll get to big basketball news in hour number two. And before we dive into the Braves and MLB and things in our final segment together, Lindsey, Auburn's hosting a regional this weekend at Plainsman Park. It is expected to be a lot of fun. Hopefully the weather kind of clears up. I know as of right now, Saturday, Sunday looks pretty good. Thursday, I know they don't play tomorrow, but it's looking dicey. Friday, just kind of up in the air.
Tomorrow's a practice day. Like, you've got all four teams have 90 minutes to practice on the field. They have that staggered all day. Started at like 10 a.m. So obviously it would be nice to get that, you know, get that practice in. Media availability is around the same time. Always makes it tough for a visiting team to not have been able to practice on the field before you play in it.
Sure.
Talking to Sonny DeShare today for the Barn Baseball Show, he said that, like, even with the NCAA taking over your facility and like dictating how much you can be in your own locker room and stuff during the week, it's still a huge advantage to be at home for the regional and the super if you make it. So,
what are your thoughts on? Because I was looking it up and I was ready to talk about how they didn't make a change, but we found out during one of the breaks yesterday they did go ahead and make the change where for super or for the regionals and for supers, walk up songs are now allowed, and so it's not the. I remember going to the game couple of years ago with Sonny, and his walk-up song was playing during a pitching change, and the opposing coach lost his mind just because the entire fan base reacted to it, and it was right when Auburn was trying to start a rally. Now, obviously, you still have to play them for both teams, but it feels like it gives a little bit more of that baseball feel and gives a little bit more of the home field advantage because, again, the Auburn crowd can now react to all of the walk-up songs for the Tigers.
Yeah, that was one of those coach feedback things that they gave the NCAA was like, we have the ability to do this for everybody, but if you're going to come into our facility and run things, there's no reason why you can't do that. And it's the only thing it really helps is the game day experience for the fans.
Yeah, right.
But it's one of the few things that the NCAA has done that like made things better for the fans. I'm totally down with it. I think it's a great change. I think the closer you can get it to being a normal weekend atmosphere, the better.
Yes.
Right? Like, you're not going to see the stuff between innings, all the fun games and things like you usually see in an Auburn game, but it's still going to be as close as you can get now with that and stuff like that to a normal atmosphere. So I'm all for it, and it's going to be great. I honestly, like, I have off of work from both from both my actual day job and all of the most of the podcasts that I do. So like, I'm going to be in the ballpark all weekend. I'm going to hopefully catch six games. And hopefully we don't go to seven.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't
right.
know. You kind of lost me when you told me we don't do the stack the cheeseburger down the third base.
We
line
don't do the stack cheeseburger. We're not chipping or anything. We're not. I don't think we're doing any of that stuff.
Reason,
unless they made that change too. They may have made that change too.
I'm asking for many of our listeners that I know. They do still sell beer, right?
They do still sell beer. Matter of fact, I imagine they'll probably be selling more. For things like this, they'll probably bring in some of the little mobile people who are walking around and doing it too, selling in the stands and
look
things like that.
Look at the NCAA. Don't tell me they don't care about the people, damn it. They love it, the NCAA.
When they can make
formed.
Money off of them, yes. Yes.
Well, we're looking forward. Yeah, I think so. We're looking forward to that this week. That's going to get started on Friday. Mm-hmm. Stetson and NC State will play 1 o'clock on Friday. Auburn will play Central Connecticut State to follow at 6 o'clock on Friday. Winner's bracket won't play until 8 o'clock Saturday night. And then would play again on Sunday at 6. And so a lot of that. But what can you tell us and the people at home? We've had some conversations, but we're asking you, the expert, talk us through this regional for Auburn, starting with Central Connecticut State, who they'll see on Friday night, and then the two opponents of Stetson and NC State.
Okay, so what you need to know about Central Connecticut, they have a kid who leads the country in batting average. And this is really the model of what Central Connecticut does. As a team, their .330 batting average is third best in the entire country. From a strikeout percentage, they strike out less than anybody else in the country, 12.8%. From a run scoring perspective, 8.9 runs per game. That's a top 15 figure. They're on base, .436, top 5 figure. But they hit for very little power. 36 home runs as a team, that's 255th in the country. They do get plenty of extra base hits. It's very much an offensive-driven group, right? Like, they are... Their whole thing is, we're going to get guys on, we're going to hit them over, we're going to bring them in, they like to run, all of that kind of stuff. What I feel good about with this matchup for Auburn is Auburn's pitching staff does not walk a lot of guys. Auburn's walk rate, it's like 8.8%, it's a top 25 mark in the whole country. And Auburn's strikeout to walk rate of like 16.8%, top 11 in the whole country. So Auburn's pitching staff is uniquely positioned to kind of offset their strength, which is drawing walks, making you come into the zone, and give them hittable pitches. And then Auburn's defense being so good. I mean, Auburn's actual ERA versus their fielding independent pitching, which is offense when you subtract the defense's contributions, right? Home runs, walks, that kind of thing. The actual ERA is like 0.3 of a run lower than the fielding independent pitching. Like, their Auburn's defense legitimately takes runs off the board. And so I feel like Auburn's uniquely positioned, as long as the bats show up, which we absolutely expect they will. They did against everybody else at home this year. Auburn should be positioned to win this one pretty handily, I would think, and advance to Saturday night, where I'm assuming they'll play NC State.
Central Connecticut plus 4,000 right now for the regional odds to win the Auburn Regional.
That's not terrible money.
It's not. It's not. No. They're, if you're talking about sprinkling, we've had a bit of a discussion on here and have some other fans in there in the same conversation as well. We saw it happen with Penn a couple of years ago where the offense goes cold, and all of a sudden you feel like then if you get into the loser's bracket, you're obviously having to work your way up in your own ballpark. Does Auburn go Dutton on Friday night to go ahead and try and secure that game one, or do you try and use one of your two or three, use a little bit more of the bullpen if you have to, so that way you can save Dutton for most likely NC State, who is obviously that second clear favorite?
The argument we made today on the Barn Baseball Show, sorry to keep plugging that, but the argument that we made on the Barn Baseball Show was go Dutton on Friday for a couple reasons. I think one, he's just so used to pitching on Friday.
Sure.
And most of the bad outings he had late in the year were where he got pushed to Saturday because of rain or schedule, whatever it may have been. So throw him on Friday. But the other reason is if you're worried that his struggles are because of workload, because he was a reliever at LSU. This is his first time starting like in college. His innings this year are equivalent to the first 3 years of his college career combined. If you're worried about his issues being workload, start him against Central Connecticut. And if things go like you expect them to, and the offense puts up plenty of runs, you can pull him at 50 pitches.
Yep.
Let a second tier guy out of the pen come in and and pitch and finish the game up that way, and not have to run him for six or seven innings or for 100 pitches or whatever. So I'm throwing Sam Dutton in game one. That's what I want to do. This is just, we don't know from Butch. We'll find out tomorrow when he has media availability. But I want to throw Dutton in game one. And then probably Cam Tilley in game two.
Win or lose?
Probably win or lose, simply because Tilley's stuff is the best. Like, Christian Shetterman's been a very, very good pitcher. But I think win or lose, I probably want Cam Tilley in there. But I probably want Cam Tilley with a little bit of a shorter leash. He does sometimes get into walk issues. But he also has told me, like personally, he enjoys the pressure. He feels like he pitches better in those pressure situations. So put Tilley in there, win or lose in game two. And honestly, after I take Dutton out of game one, I'm probably going Carson Myers for a little bit so I can bring him back on Sunday if I need to. I want to make sure he's sharp. I can bring him back on Sunday if I need to. And I think Tilley Fisher combined in game two is a pretty formidable combo from a difference in what the two guys do perspective.
Sure.
And ability of them to each give you length. If Tilley can get through the lineup once, Fisher can get through the lineup once, you're six, seven innings deep right now.
It's hard, yeah.
From there, you can mix and match.
It would be so hard not to go to Carson Myers with what he gave you in Hoover.
Exactly.
I mean, that was his best outing of the year, is what I said. And I think most people would agree with that. And with the bullpen, like Christian mentioned earlier, if you get all of those things and Auburn hitting the ball. So many people talk about in the regional, it's about scoring runs, and the super regional in a three-game set, it's about good pitching and defense. Do you agree with that sentiment of in a regional where you could play anywhere from three to five games? I mean, it's about offense versus a three-game set where if you keep the other team off the board, you have a good chance to win?
I think normally that is the case. I do think for Auburn, their offense is going to be what decides the weekend. I do think that normally you are absolutely right. Your pitching has to be dialed in. For me, for Auburn, though, given the quality of the opposing pitching that you're facing, which should be a level below what you're accustomed to in the SEC, I do think for Auburn this weekend and getting through this weekend in the minimum of three games and winning the regional is going to be what can your offense do against Central Connecticut's pitchers, against NC State's pitchers, against whoever else you get out of the loser's bracket. Is it Stetson? Is it Connecticut? Is it NC State? Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that normally it is pitching and defense. The super regional is where I think Auburn's pitchers are going to have to probably win that for you, because you're most likely, if you make the super, you're most likely facing either Coastal Carolina or Florida, and you're not going to have that raw talent advantage. Your hitters are not going to have that over their pitchers. And it's going to be more based on the pitching holding them down. But normally you are right. I think Auburn's in a unique position this time with the draw they got.
Sure. With the regional, Auburn minus 230, North Carolina State plus 280, Stetson plus 650, and Central Connecticut, as I mentioned, plus 4,000. So Auburn, very much the heavy favorite. Would you ever expect Auburn, whether it be in a regional or possibly a super regional, maybe not as much in the super, but in a regional like this, to possibly take one of the MLB methods that's getting a little bit more popular, where you almost go one of your long inning guys to start the game and you go with the starter, possibly Sam Dutton, the fifth on if it's needed? Or if he's going to throw Friday, you just let him take innings one through four, one through five, and then you figure it out from there?
I think that you'll probably see a lot of that this weekend. I think Butch kind of tends to hew a little more conservative in those. I didn't mean to say Hugh as in Hugh Freeze, just, you know, H-E-W, but it's a nice little Auburn pun there.
Freeze just wants to go to a bowl game. So.
Auburn coaching pun, yeah. But I do think that Butch tends to lean a little more conservative, and it's possible that you could see something with, like, maybe a Christian Chatterton, where he gets a veteran opening in front of him simply because at times he struggled a little bit to set his stuff in the first inning, knowing how the umpire is going to call the zone. So, I mean, obviously he'll be watching the first two games, but it's possible maybe you do something like that in game three for the freshman. But Butch's whole thing behind these upperclassmen, and Sam in particular, is we trust him to go out and be a professional and give us a professional quality start. And I think they tell him, like, hey, best case scenario, you're going to have four, you're going to have five or whatever, or you're going to have this number of pitches. Well, and they'll play it by ear. But they just let him take the game from a clean mound, which is always a big deal to a pitcher, who's been starting all year, right? Don't give him a dirty mound now. Give him the same thing he's been doing all year.
Before we get to break, for Central Connecticut State, who Auburn sees on Friday night at Plainsman Park. If you can't be there, you could tune in over on our sister station, Wings 94.3. Andy Burch and Brad Law will have the call. Do you expect it to be Vincent Borghese to go for them? Have you looked into them a whole lot? I mean, that's the kid that's gone 85 and a third innings pitch this year. He's got nearly a 4-1 strikeout to walk ratio. Do you expect him to be the guy they give the ball to on Friday night?
That is what I would do if I were them. And that's something where you make the decision based on how can I win this game versus how do I set up for the weekend. I would give him that start. He's been the best starter for them. He's got multiple complete games on the year. That is what I would do. We'll see what they actually choose, but that would be my thing. I don't think they've announced it yet. Last I looked, I hadn't seen it. I talked to somebody who covers Connecticut sports. He didn't know, but that's what he thought as well.
Real quick, again, before we head to break, another question with Auburn. Obviously, we know what best-case scenario is the offense looks like it did against Mississippi State, against South Carolina, against Jacksonville State in Game 2, and you only play 3 games, and then you have another week to prepare. Flip side, other than simply saying a loss to Central Connecticut, what is the worst possible thing that could happen with this Auburn team in the regional?
Either a notable injury or having to go to extra innings early and having to burn a lot of guys in game one. Like, you want to be set up for the weekend. Obviously, here's the thing. Like, you have to win the game, right? And teams who win game one of the regional go on to win the regional like 65% of the time. It's a crazy stat. But I think the worst case scenario, barring injury or just an outright loss, is having to either pull Sam Dutton very early or having somebody get hurt and having to go to extras and just running your bullpen ragged and then having to play from behind with guys unavailable in games 2 and 3.
Auburn baseball taking on Central Connecticut State in game 1 of the regional. That is on Friday night, 6:00 at Plainsman Park, and again over on our sister station, Wings 94.3. We'll talk more about that throughout the show and the rest of the week, but we'll talk a little Braves and MLB with drama going on with Atlanta, Philadelphia, and whoever else wants to get involved. We'll have that for you as we wrap up hour number 1 after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up hour number 1 here on ESPN 106.7. This is the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We have Lindsey Crosby in the studio for just a couple of more minutes, and we wanted to talk some Braves, some Atlanta Braves and MLB, because the Braves, they were just kind of piddling along, doing their thing, whatever. Then the man comes back, Ronald Acuna Jr., and don't want to say this show predicted it, but this show predicted it. Christian called it. I doubled down. We could have been millionaires and quit our day jobs, but we didn't because
first pitch bomb.
We did. We had a first pitch. We said, he's going to go yard. Probably first at bat. Christian said, yeah, probably first pitch.
You know who else predicted it? Ronald Acuna Jr.
Yeah.
He told his brothers on Friday morning, he's like, I'm going to go deep on the first pitch tonight.
And I said,
if you're Pivetta, why are you throwing middle 93?
Middle four seamer. So first pitch back, here you go. We just lobbed it to
Nick Pivetta does that, man. That's a Nick Pivetta thing.
He was trying to steal a strike from him is what he was trying to do.
Like the two guys who throw the most first pitch fastballs, Nick Pivetta and Ronaldo Lopez. Ronaldo Lopez does it almost every single game in his career. First pitch fastball. Like, I'm amazed more people don't do that. Don't ambush that first pitch.
And Ronald took it deep. And I mean yard.
That was both the longest, like the longest hit and the hardest hit ball for the Atlanta Braves this season.
And don't worry, the only run Atlanta scored that game was on the first pitch of the game, and they lose 2-1. That's Atlanta Braves baseball.
They have
baby.
Lost 5 of the last 6.
Yeah, you mentioned the Braves postcast and where you do all of the rundowns. It can't be too hard to explain the offensive side of things. I mean, you just look down and it's a bunch of 0-for-4s, maybe a 1-for-4 with a bloop single. But, I mean, you look at runners in scoring position. You just look at overall batting average. I mean, that job's got to be relatively easy because it's just a nightly occurrence. It's clockwork.
Well, here's the thing is the fans in the live chat on YouTube are asking us, like, why are they so bad? And we don't know. If we knew,
why are they
we'd
so
be
bad?
Working for the team fixing it. But like it's noticing the things like last night. Atlanta had runners in 8 of their 9 innings.
Yep.
They had exactly 2 at-bats with somebody on second base. God. Like with somebody in scoring position. They left 10 on base. They were 0-for-2 with runners in scoring position. 3 different times in last night's game, they got a somewhat speedy guy on to open the game. It was to open the inning. Ozzie Albies lead off in the second and the sixth, a single and a walk. Michael Harris single in the fifth. And Atlanta never even once put that guy into motion. Like, I know JT Realmuto, he's not what he used to be. He still has a good pop time. But at a certain point, when you're losing and you've been losing, you have to force the issue a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like they're scarred from
some of the bad sins at third base or the base running error Eli White made the other day. The big thing for me with this Braves team, I'm sorry, it's almost like a rant. I'm sorry. If you're not going to be hitting really well, which they're not, they're absolutely not hitting well right now, you have to do all the little things. The defense is mostly there, right? Matt Olson's generational run of defense right now. I wrote about it this morning on BravesToday.com. But Strider didn't back up third base last night. Missing the cutoff guy or throw into the wrong base. The base running error by Eli White. Watching somebody get walked on four straight pitches and going up there and swinging at the first pitch. Like, they're not doing all the little things to help offset the fact that their bats are cold.
Mistakes that you and I see, Christian, in the high school games a lot.
Self-inflicted mistakes, yes.
And thankfully, though, there's no other drama with Spencer Strider, though, right? He's just come back from injury.
He didn't mean to do it.
Okay, so for those of you who didn't watch last night's game, Spencer Strider hits Bryce Harper in his surgically repaired elbow with a fastball. And one, why, if you had surgery on your elbow, why weren't you wearing an elbow guard?
That's what Strider said. Harper. Yeah, he was like, I thought he was wearing a guard.
Like, Strider was pissed.
Thought it wouldn't hurt.
I was just aiming at it.
No, Strider was pissed that he hit him.
Right.
And then he realized, oh, he wasn't wearing a guard. He's in legitimate pain. And he started to feel bad.
Yeah.
But, like, here's the thing. Spencer Strider has hit four batters in, 15 innings this year. He threw 90 pitches last night. 40 of them were balls. He clearly does not have his location dialed in. And so there's a lot of Phillies fans who are, they're convinced it was on purpose and all of this stuff. And they're doing the Philly fan thing where they're manufacturing the outrage, like Philly as a team. It's kind of like Tennessee baseball, how they take on the fans and the team take on the personality of the head coach. Philly fans have taken on the personality of the Philly team where they manufacture outrage and all that stuff. It's not a big deal, but they're going to hit Ronald tonight, probably first pitch. Watch. Or tomorrow. Watch.
Yeah, because the game got canceled. Don't worry. The Red Sox and the Brewers are tied at 4, top of the ninth, and the Sox got them loaded with two away.
Here comes another Yelich walk-off bomb.
They'll lose.
That hurt
Lindsay,
last night.
Plug it all one more time, my friend. We appreciate you.
Social media at Crosby Baseball. The Atlanta Braves is BravesToday.com, the Braves Today podcast, and the Locked On Braves postcast, the Auburn baseball stuff. TheBarnAuburn.com and The Barn Baseball Show.
He'll be at Plainsman Park all weekend long. We'll be there as much as we can. We'll talk a little bit more about that with Double D in hour two. But breaking news for Auburn basketball. Our man is back, Tahan Pettiford. We're talking that to start hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us as we get the second hour started. And if you missed any of the first hour, you're going to want to go back and listen to that on the podcast version of the show. We had Lindsey Crosby in the studio for the entire first hour. talking mostly Auburn baseball with the regional coming up this weekend. We talked about the SEC teams hosting regionals this weekend, potential SEC super regional matchups, Auburn's games against Central Connecticut State and beyond. And then we talked a little bit of Braves and Major League Baseball as well. It was a baseball power hour. And so if you missed it, go and check it out via the podcast version of our show. You can check that all out on our station website every single day at ESPNAU.com.
And here in hour number two, I don't know if you've heard, but there's been a little bit of breaking news that we're definitely going to break down, give our thoughts on. There's actually two breaking news for Auburn on the hardwood side of things. We're going to give both of our thoughts on that as well. And it's Wednesday, and so that means it is Double D Wednesday. We get him from 3:15 to 3:45 to talk all things Auburn athletics. We're going to talk a little bit of basketball. We're going to talk a little bit of football. We're going to talk a little bit of baseball in there as well, get his thoughts on Auburn being the number four overall seed and being able to host a regional, set in line to host a super regional if all things go as planned, and all of that here in hour number two. But before we get into content in the second hour, I want to remind you that it's brought to you by our friends over at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them for sponsoring the second hour of our show here each and every day on ESPN 106.7. Jacob Goins, Christian Griffin here with you in the studio. And my man, we got him.
What a
he
day.
He is back.
What
we,
a day.
We knew today was going to be a fantastic show with the guests lined up and all of the good news around Auburn. You're able to get one of the European stars that's been in the works for a while now, but now it is officially official. And everybody sat there and said, okay, that's great news. But there's
that's
still,
great, but
it was call now and we'll double the offer, right? And
if you order in the next 15 minutes,
correct,
you'll get free shipping. No,
exactly.
If you order in the next 15 minutes, we'll double your order absolutely free. Yes. Just pay separate shipping.
Yeah, the 10 seconds underneath. But no, but Auburn did double the offer. And now everybody in Auburn, everybody that wears the orange and blue and the AU logo, you felt like took a unanimous sigh of relief. Mm-hmm. And there, man, you feel the sun is just shining a little bit brighter today. Everything just smells a little bit better as Sahad Pettiford has taken his name out of the NBA draft process, and he has announced that he will be playing inside Neville Arena once again next year.
Joe Tipton tweeted it out a little bit ago, about 15-20 minutes before we came on the air, and of course with our baseball power hour we pushed talking about this to the second hour, and it was something we were expecting, it was something we were hopeful for, but it was not guaranteed. This was not something that it was just an absolute no-brainer of, you know, going one way or the other.
Is that not the Auburn way? It was expected, but until we see it go final,
yeah,
we're not too sure.
Yeah, can Joe Tipton tweet out, like, the actual contract? Or can Bruce Pearl, like, make sure? Can they go ride in a Bentley somewhere
just
today?
Anything.
Just to make sure. Just to give me, just to give our, you know,
Auburn's supposed to win 7.5 games. It's expected that they do, but
I mean, Auburn's supposed to beat Central Connecticut State on Friday night, but I don't know until we see it. And with Tahani Pettiford going into today, and why today was so important was he had until midnight tonight, 11:59:59, to withdraw his name from the NBA draft process and return to school. We've seen a ton of guys doing this one way or the other across college basketball the last several days of who have decided to stay in the NBA draft and test the waters there. Not even test the waters, you in it now. Or guys who have taken their name out and have decided to come back. And maybe that's a conversation for Free For All Friday to talk about a lot of these big names. I mean, Adut Thierro left his name in there for Arkansas, so he's not returning. He's going to be going to the NBA. I mean, so many of these names, and maybe that's a Free For All Friday conversation, but that's why today was so important, was the idea that Tahad Pettiford, who would be the only returning player on Auburn's team next year, had until today to either take his name out or leave it in. And it was announced from Joe Tipton, who's one of the biggest college basketball reporters in the country. He reported, it says news, Auburn's Tahad Pettiford is withdrawing from the NBA draft process and will return to Auburn next season, a source told On3. The 6'1 guard was one of the most top freshmen in college basketball this past season. And Christian, this immediately elevates the expectations for Auburn next year, because we understand that Bruce Pearl and company brought in some really good talent from the high school ranks, from the transfer portal, and now from overseas. We'll talk about more of that here, probably with Daryl, to be honest. But the comfort and the confidence and the trust that you have knowing who is going to now be your starting point guard, Tahad Pettiford, is coming back for another year.
Yeah, you have PG1. You have that security blanket that you just know can make all of the shots in the gym and makes the right play more times than not. You would imagine that one of the biggest things that the draft process was able to give him a lot of insight is, you heard him on day one when he had that electrifying game of 23-8. It said right-handed passing and the ability to playmake. Those are two of the things that they told him through the combine, and then all of a sudden you saw those in the games. You imagine him taking a big-time emphasis on that side of things. It's something we've talked about during the freshman year of the talent was clearly there. The ability to shoot and make the right play was always there. Every once in a while, the ball stuck. I don't think you're going to see as much of that, just simply because, A, the talent that's going to be on the team, the talent that's on the perimeter, and, again, now that he has true NBA draft guys that are in there going, hey, we'd love to draft you. Right now, you're anywhere from very late first to very, very early second. These are some of the things that we'd like to see you improve on. Oh, let me go and take it to arguably the most talented college basketball teams and seasons that we've ever seen last year and now this year. Go do that at such a high level. I've said it. I tweeted it out. I put it on my Instagram. He's going to be a 20-5 guy. I think he's somebody that day one competes for SEC Player of the Year and then a lottery pick next year. But most importantly, Auburn gets their starting point guard back.
And just, again, I can't.
Or I guess not their starting point guard back. You now have your guard back who's going to be
correct.
That starting guard.
I caught myself earlier having to reword it because he wasn't the starter a year ago. But
just
he's
played
going
starter
to,
minutes.
Exactly, too. But he's going to be this year. And not that Auburn was not going to be good if Tahad didn't come back, but it's hard to put a value on how many more wins you'll get because of him, but it may not even be to that extreme. Well, I think it is, but it's also how many more losses do you avoid because of somebody like Tahad Pettiford, who you said at 20 points, 5 assists a game, somebody who is flirting with that idea, somebody who in just one season as a freshman proved to be the stone cold killer from Jersey, who hit several big shots throughout his first year. And you expect that to only get better. You expect his team play to only get better. You expect his turnovers to get better. You expect his decision making to get better. You just expect Tahad Pettiford to get better as a player. And the idea.
Pause right there. Just let that sit right there.
And the idea of a better version of Tahad Pettiford should scare the crap out of college basketball because he's that good. He could have been drafted, he could have gone, and a team would have loved to have him. He's going to make somebody very, very happy this time next year.
And it's amazing that it gets to be the Auburn Tigers. Again, some of the other names that you mentioned, is it Thorough? He confirmed he is staying?
No, he's going. Or Duke Thorough.
Keeping his name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's staying in the NBA draft. He's going to leave Arkansas.
Some of the other big-time names, RJ Lewis is still in there, Otega Owe, and Tahad Pettiford. Those were kind of the guards that highlighted everything. But the Auburn Tigers, they get their guy, and there's another guy that Auburn's able to get overseas, but we get to talk about that here in just a little bit.
Yes, we do. We're going to get to Daryl Dappert here very quickly, but the text box is just going crazy. Shoot us all your thoughts and comments there, 334-784-1067. Somebody says, have Tahad Pettiford throw out the first pitch on Friday night for Auburn baseball.
Oh,
that would be awesome. NCAA wouldn't let him do it. There's no way. No way, because of it being an NCAA tournament. Sorry to, you know, hate on that idea, but just thinking logically, unfortunately. I hate that we had to do it, but NCAA probably wouldn't let it happen. That'd be too much of an advantage for Auburn. They might hang 30 on Central Connecticut State if Tahad Pettiford were to throw out the first pitch. on Friday. That's very, very fun. A couple of other people have said, let's go, Tahad. They're asking best guess of Auburn's preseason ranking would have been without him and what it will likely be with him. This person also says, I heard that Tahad is in consideration for the empty Alabama Senate seat. Just kidding. I think, and I know we got to get to break and get to Daryl, I think most preseason projections that you've seen, John Rothstein being one of them, had Tahad Pettiford coming back and had him built into their rankings, sure, where Auburn is hovering around the top 15 team in the country right now. And I don't think that's incorrect. And we'll talk to Daryl about that too.
Yeah, I don't think it's incorrect simply because there's still so many question marks.
Sure.
Tahad Pettiford is the exclamation point that you feel like you know what you're going to get night in and night out, or at least if you got any sort of reflection of what you saw this time last year, I think you're very, very happy. It's more so there is so much talent on the team. It's hoping that Bruce and the staff can find a way to make them mesh, make them gel. I would say, yeah, if Tahad was keeping his name, you'd see a top 25 logo or record by your name. I think with Tahad Pettiford, you're easily 12th to 15th. And I don't think that that's anything that should throw anybody up in flames about, just again, because there are simply so many question marks about this upcoming team.
We'll talk to Double D, Daryl Dappert from Locked On Auburn in the Barn, get his immediate thoughts on Tahad Pettiford, plus an addition from overseas and a whole lot more. Double D joins us coming up next.
War Eagle, this is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Auburn Opelika sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
I don't think we could have asked for a better day to bring this man on the radio, where there's so many big-time pieces of news for Auburn basketball, Auburn baseball hosting a regional this weekend, and the hype for Auburn football continues to grow. We're joined by Daryl Dappert, Double D for Double D Wednesday from Locked On Auburn and the Barn. My man, it is so good to have you on the airwaves, and I hope we can find something to talk about.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, right? Can we? I mean, my goodness, what a day. I mean, absolutely a great day, and kind of expected. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I mean, it's not like for the last month and a half, a lot of people that I really, really trust that are involved in NIL things with the Pettifords and that kind of thing have made it very clear that he was going to come back, and he was just getting, an analysis, getting what he had to work on, just things like that, as far as what could he do better to position himself in the draft to be a professional player next year. And so it's, that's getting analyzed and getting all that stuff taken care of, but that they felt like he was going to come back all along because there were some aspects of his game he had to work on. And even that scrimmage where people started to really panic when he went off in that scrimmage, felt like defensively, there might be some things you need to work on, size. So until you hear it, though, and I think the last 48 hours, guys, when you started seeing a bunch of other draft prospects, mm-hmm, or college players that could come back when they were coming back and going back to their schools, and then that Auburn never really pursued a guard, not a one guard, not a combo guard, nothing. All signs pointed to him coming back. But until you hear it, it's just a great day, and then with that coupled with the announcement of Jokic, who's I think a really good player, very much under the radar as an international player. I think he's been rated in the top 15 from Serbia, 6'9", really good around the rim. I want to see him shoot the basketball a little bit better. But Auburn's lineup is really, really good and really deep, and it's just going to be another fun year. And I think they've rounded that out today. They've completed their team.
Well, I just hate that you weren't able to correctly predict either one of these things happening, Daryl. I mean, you didn't know any of this was going on.
Yeah, I got to be honest. Good sources behind the scenes, right? I mean, you can only trust your sources, and I never want to burn them, so I wait until very close to announcement time, until I'm 100% sure and can verify that. But, yeah, I felt comfortable with some of the people that I've been talking to and what they were telling me. The Jokic thing you and I talked about last week, it's that, mm-hmm, FIBA letter of clearance thing that it just dot the I's, cross the T's, or that probably would have happened 2 weeks ago. You've really got to get all that kind of taken care of when you're talking about an international player. But yeah, I'm blessed with some people that are really plugged in and have shared information, and I won't burn them on stuff, but it is fun to kind of tease things in the morning. Only reason why I do that, it's not Twitter cred or it's not anything. It's people that watch the show or listen to the show or listen to your show. I want there to be some, validation of what we do and that we are trying to get the best information for them and share that. So when you can throw out little teasers and get people excited throughout the day, that's always fun. It's always fun to have people looking forward to something, read a little bit piece of information and have something to kind of look forward to. And so that's why I threw it out there this morning on X. And it's just one of those situations where felt good about it. Got some texts this morning, got some things this morning that kind of lined up. And it was just kind of affirmation of what we've been hearing for about a month or so.
You get Tahad Pettiford, you get the Big 12 leading scorer, you get the second best scorer from another SEC team, the number one overall JUCO recruit, the number one D2 transfer, the sixth man on an Elite 8 team, a top 15 international prospect, and then a 7-foot JUCO center with 4 years of eligibility. Right before we got you on, Darryl, we were talking about where does Auburn rank in the preseason top 25. A bunch of the guys, even with Tahad Pettiford returning, had Auburn anywhere from kind of the 12th to the 16th seeded spots or the ranked team in the country. Does that increase at all to you? Do you have any further expectations of them jumping, or do you feel like that spot kind of right in between 12 and 16 is a very legitimate and understandable fit for this Auburn team?
I'd move it a little bit higher. I'd go to like the 10 to 14th range with Pettiford coming back and the announcement of Jokic. And the reason why is the flexibility, the absolute versatility of this lineup. Guys, if you look through it, other than Tahad, everybody else plays multiple positions. The Magwood kid that's a recruit that people don't need to sleep on him as a true freshman can play the one or the two. Hall can play the three or the four. Murphy can play the four or the five. Bashir could play the two or the three. Overton can play the two or the three. Freeman can play the three or the four. Every time Auburn gets another kid and gets another weapon or tool in the tool belt, I end up having a harder time figuring out. I mean, I loved Bashir when he signed, and then Freeman, and then Hall signed, and then Freeman signed. And then you get a big, Murphy was before Freeman, but Jokic, I love his. There's so many players that I look at and go, man, I love this kid. I can't wait to watch him play. And then it gets upstaged by the next signee or the next commitment. So the versatility of this roster and how they can play multiple positions, I think, is the key. Because when you line up against a particular team, whether it's in the SEC or out of conference or in tournament, and there's a scheme or a defense that coach is running, if you have the ability to adjust your lineup and play people in multiple positions, you can attack that defense differently, i.e. a team that plays zone and says, okay, I'm going to make you shoot us out of this zone. I'm going to pack it in and make you beat us from the three. Well, then you play, Hall, Bashir, Overton, Tahad. You can stack your lineup full of three-point shooters. If a team is undersized for Auburn and you can beat them on the boards, you can go big. I mean, I really love the versatility because of people being able to play multiple positions. And I think that's why this team is extremely different than some of the Bruce Pearl teams that he's had in the past.
You were starting to allude to it there a little bit, Darryl, but I'll be honest with you. I mean, I was excited about the additions that Auburn has made. I'm really excited about the three high school recruits coming in. And then even earlier today with Jovic, the international kid that's coming over too, I was excited about all of that. But I still had some questions because all of them were going to be new when they stepped on to the Plains. That is now changing because of Tahad Pettiford. I mean, how big is it to be bringing at least one player back on this team that knows Bruce Pearl, that knows Neville Arena, that just has some familiarity with what's going on around here?
Well, he's going to be called upon to do two things this year that he didn't have to do last year. And how he adjusts to that is another step in his maturation process towards the NBA. And that's why I think the scouts will watch this closely. He'll be asked to start, where he came off the bench last year, that's a whole different deal when you're in the starting lineup. He can handle it. He'll be fine. I'm just saying that's a different thing for him. I think this NBA scouts want to see how he deals with being the big dog, the starting point guard in Auburn's lineup. The second thing he'll have to do is he'll have to lead. He was a freshman last year and got led by others, got led by the Denver Jones and the Jani Brooms and the Dylan Cardwells. Now he'll have to lead. It's very difficult for a transfer to come in and have a voice that gets heard. The only thing that I would say Auburn's kind of in a good situation is you're trying to lead a bunch of other transfers. Everybody's in the same boat. You're not coming in as a transfer trying to be a leader with guys that are established that have been there already, five, six, seven guys. Everybody but Pettiford really is new. So that's a help. But I think Tahad's going to have to lead, and he's going to be coming, you know, he's going to be starting. And that means being a little bit more disciplined defensively. Can't pick up those reach fouls really, really quick. Because, you know, you're starting point guard, you don't want sitting on the bench with three fouls in the first half.
That's a great point.
It was different when you had Denver. You could bring Denver back in after Pettiford fouled three times in 10 minutes. You don't have that option or that luxury this year. He's going to have to mature defensively. He's going to have to be a leader, and he's going to start. And I think those are different from what he had to do this past year.
Obviously, a lot of this comes down to what the team looks like, what they're able to do, and then the points that you bring up with foul trouble and defense. But you've seen this Bruce Pearl team or teams in the past where, you know, so many different guys get that 24, 26-minute mark. Do you expect Tahad Pettiford to be one of those few guys that can get up to 28 or 30, 32 minutes per game, or do you still expect him to kind of have those same number of minutes just from that starting role?
No, I think he's going to be called upon to have, extended minutes. I think Auburn needs him and wants him, especially since probably this will be his last year at Auburn, to get into the 30-minute plateau. And then you give Magwood, 10, 12, whatever you need to do, even if it's at the 2 and some at the 1. That's going to have to happen. And I think they're going to count on him. They're going to ride him. They're going to need him for 30 minutes. Therefore, he's going to have to stay out of foul trouble. Where you're okay is if you play a different style, and if Magwood shows that he could pick up the point guard position pretty early and be the dynamic scorer he looks like in camps and tournaments and in high school. If he's able to do that and give you 10 to 15 minutes, some at the 1, some at the 2, and be that dynamic, you're okay if Pettiford only plays 26, 27, 28 minutes. But if he doesn't, Auburn's had some bad luck, except with Pettiford, with some of these point guards that are freshmen, the Westries, the Holloways, some of these kids that haven't come in and made the immediate impact that people thought they would. You've got to have Magwood do that, even as a backup point guard, because there's nowhere else to turn as far as running the point after Tahad. So that's going to be a key. Magwood's development, I think, is if Magwood shows that he can play 15 minutes a game, and score and be an instant scorer and handle the ball, then Tahad doesn't have to play 30. But I think they're counting on him getting into the 30-minute range.
Yeah, I think so. I think you bring up a lot of good points about Pettiford, about the recruits that are coming in. And, I mean, you never know. They could evolve into something like we saw Tahad do from a year ago. But we want to ask some more about the international star that was added to this team, Jovic, who will be on this squad, and kind of what the makeup is going to be altogether. Plus, Auburn Baseball is hosting a regional this weekend at Plainsman Park. We're talking all that and more with Daryl Dapperts. He's with us for another segment right after this.
With Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and we're joined by Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn and the Barn. Two segments every single Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45. And Daryl, tell the people what you got going on at those two places right now with a lot of basketball news. I know a little bit of baseball in there and football offseason stuff. You guys are staying busy.
We are. Wednesdays and Fridays are the typical days I'm on Locked On Auburn with Zach Blackerby. We've got a lot to talk about, obviously, over the last month and then coming up with what you talked about, baseball and a recruiting weekend this weekend and then some other things going on. And then on Sundays at 8 p.m., we do kind of a live show along with Charlie Five. It's this thing called the Barncast with some other people that are affiliated with the Barn and the Next Round Live. And we just do a kind of a live show. It's kind of interactive and just does the whatever the topics of the week are. And there'll be a lot to discuss Sunday, that's for sure.
Well, we're always appreciative of you and your time, and we tell you so often that it's a fan favorite of the week, and you're just so much fun to talk to and so knowledgeable, and so we're always appreciative of you and your time. And there's still so much to get to. We're going to talk a little bit more baseball here with you in just a moment, but with this Auburn basketball team, with Tahat Pettiford coming back, the news of today, you went into it a little bit about Jovich, the international kid who's going to be coming over and will be on this year's team, Daryl. That's what people don't may not realize, is he's going to be on this year's roster for the Tigers.
He is. I don't know if – I mean, I heard that he's coming in as a freshman as far as status. I don't know if he'll play 2 years at Auburn. Maybe he will. Maybe he'll play a year and kind of do the same thing, go through the draft process and get evaluated. But, I mean, you know, just to even get him to get Jovich for 1 year would be huge. And I like him. I mean, I've seen some publications that have him as, you know, kind of a backup four, but still playing significant minutes. I think it's going to be hard to keep him off the court as a starter. I really do. Of course, that how does Freeman kind of fit in with that? That may be the reason why he comes off the bench, is you have Hall at the three, Overton at the two, Freeman at the four, Murphy at the five, and then the big kid from Butler Community College, a seven-footer, and Jovich can come off the bench along with those freshmen. So there's just a lot, like I said, versatility. But I tell you what, him coming in as a freshman, that international level of basketball, guys, there's such a maturation in how these kids develop. They really are good fundamentally. They know the game. They understand the game. They're good passers. They're good distributors. This kid, I've seen the footage that I've seen, is a lot of dunks. Really, really good around the rim. I want to see if he can hit, you know, mid-range jumpers, baseline jumpers. Can he shoot the three? Some of those aspects of his game will have to come along. But 6'9", very athletic, and coming in on this year's roster as a freshman, he can contribute immediately.
You've mentioned it several times, just the athleticism that this team is going to have. I mean, the fact that they're going to be bigger, faster, stronger than maybe any team we've ever seen at Auburn. I mean, we talked about just the scoring ability and the defense of this past year's team going into the season, and, you know, the excitement of Denver Jones and Miles Kelly and those guys being able to shoot the basketball. But I think this team is just going to be able to outjump anybody, outrun anybody, and just be pure, more athletic than anybody.
I do. This is going to be a very, very fun team to watch. Now, look, going to the Final Four is fun. Watching Dylan Cardwell and Jani Broom and Denver Jones and Miles Kelly and Tahad last year and all those guys, they were fun. That was a fun team. But the newness of this and watching players that you've not seen in an Auburn uniform that are very, very versatile, they can play multiple positions, that are very athletic, this is going to be a fun team to watch. And I think the interesting thing is going to be, and one of the key indicators is, how fast do they gel? How fast does that chemistry come together to where they start to play together as a team? Because you are getting a lot of moving parts from a lot of different. This is a team that I would love to have seen go overseas and play in the summer, just to kind of get acclimated with each other and used to each other and play some games. They're not going to have that opportunity. Now, I don't think Auburn's out-of-conference schedule is going to be as brutal as last year, although they are playing Houston, they are playing Purdue, and they are playing in Tucson at Arizona. So those are three right out of the gate. all three of those should be ranked teams. It's tough. Will they play as tough as a non-conference schedule as last year? That would be difficult with a team that you're trying to get to mesh and get some chemistry together.
Well, we've been very happy with the news of Tahad Pettiford returning to Auburn. And another exciting news that we've received earlier in the week on Monday is Auburn baseball securing the fourth overall national seed, easily set to host. Everybody felt relatively confident about that. And you felt, for the most part, pretty confident on Auburn's ability an opportunity to host a super regional if they were to get that far. However, the number four spot you felt like came as a very, very pleasant surprise. Darryl, what was your thoughts when that news was initially released?
I thought that the SEC tournament was not going to have that big of an impact on Auburn seeding. I know they went one and done, lost to Texas A&M, who was playing some pretty good baseball in the tournament. I didn't think it was going to impact Auburn, but I also didn't think that Auburn was anything higher than a sixth seed at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I fully expected when that bracket came out and the national seeds were announced that Auburn was going to be a seven. So when they were a four and that matches you up against a 13 in the super regionals, that was a coup. I mean, that was a big, big deal. And it goes to RPI, strength of schedule, mm-hmm. all the things that Butch Thompson did from a scheduling standpoint this year, you know, it really mattered. It really mattered because I think Auburn was the first team that wasn't in the 40-win plateau to get a national seed in the top eight, so to speak. So 17 and 13 in the conference, I think that run of six series victories in a row was a big deal. The pitching staff. Because remember, at the beginning of the year, there was a huge concern with the bullpen. Auburn was blowing leads, and that was a concern. People were like, if you're blowing leads in this out of conference, what's going to happen when the conference starts? But I think that tournament in Texas was a big indicator at Globe Life Field in Arlington of what kind of season that Auburn could have. And then once they started getting the bullpen figured out, they went on a great run, hitting the baseball and closing out some really big series victories. And that matters. And when you start stacking them in the conference that's as dominant as the SEC, it paid off, and that's why they were rewarded with a four seed.
Auburn minus 230, very heavy favorites to win their regional with NC State, Stetson, and with Central Connecticut State as the four seed again. They're not too bad for the money line if you were to interest on Central Connecticut State. But what were your thoughts initially when those four teams were announced, and what's the biggest thing that you want to see inside Plainsman Park this weekend?
North Carolina State's obviously the one that you look at and say, you know, they could be a problem in the ACC. They did go out early in the ACC tournament. They have some pitching issues. So, you know, Auburn having played the SEC schedule that they have, I think this is a very good bracket, sets up well for them. They have what they want. They should take care of business. There's no excuse. There's no excuse for Auburn not to come out of this regional. Even Stetson, who got hot late, you know, I mean, it's a different level. So Auburn, if they hit the baseball, what happened a couple years ago, and I got to give Lindsey Crosby a ton of credit, our good buddy that's a baseball savant.
You don't have to give him credit.
Well, I will. I'll give him some love. He said 2 years ago Penn scared him. I said, what are you talking about? And he said, dude, they have a number one starter that could pitch in the big leagues. And that's all it takes, guys. You run into a number one and he beats you, then you're in the loser's bracket. I don't think anybody else in this region has that. I can't foresee Auburn's bats being silent. I think that they'll be able to slug it out, you know, with anybody this year, as far as even if North Carolina State gets hot, if Auburn gets by Central Connecticut and they beat Stetson in game two. So, it'll be interesting to see what methods Auburn wins. They can beat you with their three starters. Those three starters are pretty good, those starting pitching, but they can also outslug you and beat you 12-8. Auburn's had to do that this year. So how they win, or if they win this regional and how they win it, it to me is going to be very, very telling as well.
I have the most important question that could ever be asked on this radio station today. Will there be a Daryl Dapridge double D sighting at Plainsman Park at any point this weekend for a regional game?
Yes, it looks like maybe Saturday there could be a sighting.
Oh, yeah. Saturday.
Yeah, there could be, rumor has it that there could be a sighting Saturday.
I have insider information that Double D very well could be there, so I'm going to go ahead and put that on social media, go ahead and blow it up, start engaging, and I'll let you know if he does end up showing up on Saturday.
Yeah.
First round's
Bobby,
also on him.
I may break out the light blue Barn baseball t-shirt for
nice.
That. So the Barn that we have. That Lindsay runs that show. I may bust that out. That'd be a good time to show that shirt off.
Christian said first round's on you. I don't know if you heard that.
I'm fine with that. Let's roll.
You heard it here on the radio. Can't take it away. It'll be on the podcast version at ESPNAU.com as well. Double D, Daryl Dapperts, my man. We appreciate you as always, and there's just so much going on. And I know off-season's coming up, but, brother, we've got baseball. We've got football recruiting in June, and then you've got SEC Media Days in July, and fall practice starts in August.
Yeah. Oh, wow. It's fixing to get really, really crazy. I hope there's, Omaha, that we'll be talking about Omaha and super regionals and all that good stuff. Big Cat weekends, man. There's still a lot to look forward to in the next couple months.
Daryl Dapridge, Locked On Auburn and the Barn. He's with us every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45, and we cannot put it into words enough how much we appreciate him joining us every single week. My man, have a great rest of your week, and I hope to see you at Plainsman on Saturday.
All right, brother. Take care.
Thanks, man. That's Daryl Dapperts, Double D, joining us on the airwaves once again. And you can hear it from him, Christian. He's excited about this Auburn basketball team and what the roster has now become on a team that has just one returning player. But listen to some of this depth. I mean, you're going to have Tahad and Caden Magwood at the point. You're going to have Kevin Overton, Abdul Bashir, and then Walker at the two, more than likely. Elijah Freeman, Keyshawn Hall at the three. You'll have now Jovich. I don't know where to put him. Four, five, I don't.
With him only,
I'm thinking as a four.
With him only being, I say only, being 6'9", who would thought it? I mean.
Yeah. Well, that's so crazy, too, is the fact that college basketball fans have gotten into this mindset that if you're not 7 feet tall, you can't play center in college basketball. Like, where did that come from? I know we've got some out there, but you don't have to be 7 feet tall to play center in the NCAA.
Especially not in today's game.
No, where it's so fast and so high scoring, but that's where everybody's at. I've dealt with it with other teams. It's like, oh, he's not 7 feet. We don't want him. What?
Stars like, don't matter if he's not, 7'2".
Like, it's so dumb. So I would imagine Filip Jovich would be a four, could be a five in certain situations like Daryl talked about. And then you also have Keyshawn Murphy, Emeka Opurim, who could play the five as well. So the accolades are there. The names are there. The proof is in the pudding in other spots. It just depends on if it all comes together here at Auburn.
Yeah, there is no question on the talent level. There cannot be the Auburn football of 2022 mentality of, we just weren't as talented as the team that took the field across from us. You're not going to be able to say that, and you haven't been able to in Neville Arena for a while. Right now, again, once everybody gets to campus, the pressure is now, you feel like, on the coaching staff to make sure that the right things are done systematically to make sure that you figure out who can play with who. And obviously it takes a little bit of the season, but the talent you feel like is not questionable whatsoever. It's just making sure, as you're talking about, you get the mesh, you get the gel, and that can lead to the overall success.
And kind of reading between the lines there, also, side note, you mentioned Otega Owe earlier. Had that news gone official yet?
No.
It has now. Otega Owe withdrawing from the NBA draft and will return to Kentucky for his senior season. Holy smokes.
You're seeing more and more of them do it.
That Kentucky team is going to be stupid good. That's from Joe Tipton 3 minutes ago.
Kentucky, Florida, and Auburn are going to be absolutely,
they're
going to
be nasty. And what's so crazy is those three teams are going to be really, really good. They may not even be as good as some of the teams in the Big Ten. I mean, there's some Big Ten teams at the top that are really, really good. There's some teams across the country that are going to be really, really good. Maybe in the Big 12, ACC, Just kidding. Or other teams out west. I mean, there's some really good squads across the country. But, yeah, so take a Oweh coming back to Kentucky.
Yeah, again, you're seeing more and more of them do it. If they're not going to be one of those lottery picks, even 21st, 22nd, 23rd, right, kind of where Yaxel Lindenberg was projected to go. You're seeing more of it, and you're going to continue to see more of it. This college game over the past couple of seasons and into probably next season, and I would assume the season following that until – some sort of NIL collective change happens, the college game is going to be at an all-time high. Because, again, if you are 24th overall projected in the first round, you go back to college with that same mindset that Tahad Pettiford has. You go and you compete, you work on everything that you need to do, so that way the following year you're a lottery pick, and there's not as much risk in that nowadays simply because of what can be made at the college level.
We'll talk more about this later on. I think that's a good segment on Free for All Friday, just all these names that have either gone to the NBA or, more importantly, the ones that are coming back to college and how that'll impact Auburn. Maybe we'll have that for you on a Friday afternoon. But what we got to do is pay the bills and take our final break here in the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We'll come back and wrap it all up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Been a great show today, man. We have we've had a lot of great content, great guests all show long. Lindsey Crosby joined us in hour number one. He does the Barn Auburn for baseball. He'll be at Plainsman Park this weekend. Also does the Braves postcast with Locked On. He does Braves Today. He does a lot. And so he was with us the entire first hour talking baseball as Auburn is setting up to host the regional this weekend. We're going to talk some more about that tomorrow and, of course, on Friday as well. And then here in hour number two, it has been heavy basketball as Auburn adds, I say it that way, you added two players to this team. Yep. You added an international kid in Jovich, who is going to be very, very good, 6'9", can shoot, can score, can defend, and then you bring Tahad Pettiford back out of the NBA draft. And so we talked to Daryl Dapperch about that. We've talked about it as well. So if you missed any of the show, this is one you need to go back and listen to on our station website at ESPNAU.com, and you start looking ahead to what tomorrow is going to hold. We'll have two wonderful guests. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network will join us to give a full preview of the regional this weekend for Auburn, what he expects to happen, what he thinks could happen, what could and should, and what we hope could happen, right? I mean, there's so many things with that scenario, and so we'll talk to him about that tomorrow. And then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC, we get to have 15 minutes is not going to be enough with him tomorrow because we could talk baseball with him. We could talk basketball with him. All these spring meetings going on right now. A lot of that's going to be tomorrow and on Friday's show too, just because every hour seems like there's a new quote coming out from either Greg Sankey or a head coach or somebody down there that's got everybody all fired up. So that'll be on tomorrow's show and carry into Friday as well.
Yeah, we got some Kirby Smart quotes. We've gone a couple of, or talked about a couple of them, but some more have been released on some high school players and their recruitments and how all of that is pictured. So definitely want to tune in to tomorrow. But as we wrap up the show, we weren't able to get to it yesterday, but the Auburn basketball, the Battleground 2K doubleheader with Auburn and Houston has been confirmed. It's dated for Sunday, November 16th. And so thankfully it's not on a Saturday like it was last year. It is on a Sunday. And for those that don't have the Auburn schedule for football pulled up, that is the football bye week too. So you don't have to sit there and hope or wonder if there's going to be two losses, and or you don't have to stress possibly two wins. It is the football bye week in between Vanderbilt and Mercer. But really cool that that is being confirmed. They are not quite sure what the earlier game will be, but that's stated to be the headliner game.
Well, that's one of the big non-con games that Auburn's going to have on the schedule. Houston, Purdue, those games are in there. Have they? I don't think they have talked about the SEC-ACC challenge for next year. I don't think we've seen anything. I wish they would do
it at home and home.
I do too. That's what I was going to say. A two-year set where whoever you play, you go Auburn would obviously went to Cameron Indoor.
Let Auburn host Duke.
Let Auburn host Duke and let them see how hard it is. That would be incredible. But no, that would make too much sense. So we'll see.
They'd throw that on the CW, so that way ESPN wouldn't be able to.
SEC Network plus mm-hmm. that you have to pay an extra $58
ESPN,
for.
ESPN, the Ocho, baby.
The Ocho. Hey, don't hate on the Ocho now. There was some good stuff on there back in the day. All right, that's it. We're out of time here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. Back tomorrow, though. Two great guests. Lots more content. Come back, won't you? 2 to 4 here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.